Hello and welcome to another Innovation Forum podcast. My name is Toby Webb. I'm here in India with Dawa Dorje, who is the Global Supply Chain Director for ConConnect, and Alison Ward, CEO of ConConnect. So welcome to the podcast, both of you. Dawa, for the benefit of the listeners, tell us where we are right now.
So at the moment, we are sitting in one of our program partners, Jinnah cum Spinnaker facility in Kadi, which is close to Ahmedabad in the state of Gujarat in India.
Alison, we worked with you for about 10 years through ConConnect, before that for many years in other ventures. Why have you invited me here to see your followers and today to sit and talk to Jinnah's? And of course, we have Malin Baker along with us, who we collaborate with at Innovation Forum. So why are we here?
We wanted you to follow the journey of cotton, right from the farmer. Then here today, you've seen the lorries unloading from that bought from the farmers into the gin and then into the spinning process as well. And one of the big achievements over the last 10 years is being able to provide traceable cotton. And I think when I joined ConConnect, everyone said it was too difficult, the supply chain's opaque, it's impossible. But actually, we've been able to do it. And I think it's great to show you and your expertise in on the supply chains what we've done. And then hopefully, through your network, we can also learn about how we can take it forward in cotton, looking at other quantities as well.
Well, listener, you'll be hearing more about this in the coming months because Malin and I have been doing a lot of filming and interviews. We're going to put together a little documentary about a story of traceable, sustainable into regenerative cotton. So keep an eye out on that on the Innovation Forum channels over the next couple of months. But let's just preview it a bit. Let's talk about where we've been and what we've seen. Let's talk about the cotton production, first of all. We've been out in the fields, out in various villages, visiting farmers. What have you been trying to show us, Dawa, over the last week or so?
The basic objective was to show across all entire end-to-end supply chain and the solution that we offer for our sustainable cotton program. As you have visited and seen and met with all the key stakeholders, right from the farmers to the processors. So we're taking you through this journey so that you understand and get a fair idea about the entire processes that are involved, including all our checks, measures, and balances in the entire system through traceability, through verification processes, etc. And how each of our processors function within their respective capacity, following the detailed SOPs laid out for them.
It's been a fascinating week. We've been to villages that say real regenerative on the sign. Now, just explain what real is and tell us, Alison, why are these villages regenerative? I know you're not concerned about throwing that term around because some people think it's greenwash. How is it different from sustainable? So just give us that picture.
Absolutely. A real program is a code which outlines a number of agricultural practices, and then it's first, second, and third priority verified. So it's a code that ensures for brands and retailers that we know what's happening at a farm level, but it's also best practices for farmers so that they know that they're producing cotton which is more sustainable and better for their environment and livelihoods. 3 years ago, we developed a regenerative section of that code, so we now have a real regenerative code. Regenerative, as we know, is a really popular theme at the moment, and you've covered it, Toby, in some of your webinars and your meetings. What's interesting, a lot of the practices for regenerative started in Indore in India. So the Indore composting technique is really famous, and that's often the base of regenerative practices in the UK and US. We're almost coming back to the roots of good farming practice here in India. And this week we visited farmers who are in their second year of regenerative training, really to learn from them about how this applies to smallholder agriculture, what we need to adapt and change, and really how the farmers are benefiting from these new techniques of farming.
So we've seen some real progress numbers from ConConnect on how things are improving. But are you going to raise the bar over time? I mean, let's say you get a 30% reduction in pesticide and fertilizer use, 20% increase in yield, 25% increase in farmers' incomes. I'm pulling those numbers out of the air. Those are not official ConConnect numbers, but it's in that kind of ballpark. What's good enough to stay regenerative? Where do you want to get to in the villages that you're at the moment?
So I think for farmers, there's still more to do. One of the big parts about regenerative is tillage. In most regenerative practices, there shouldn't be tilling of the soil because it obviously breaks the soil down. The idea in India of talking to a farmer about not tilling is really difficult. It's so ingrained in terms of how the village operates. There's oxen that till. In fact, I had a conversation last year with some field executives, and I asked them about it, and they couldn't even understand the question I was asking about not tilling. There's some way to go, and I think we have to go at the pace of farmers. I think we have to make it appropriate for India. We shouldn't, at Cotton Connect, we don't just plonk things into a market. We adapt them for that context. So I think it's more farmers doing more regenerative practices. So ideally, over time, all of our work would be regenerative. I think that's personally my goal. And then as we look at the farm, and you saw the farmers are growing local grains that they're selling in the market, there's fruit and vegetables. All of that is actually in a regenerative farm. So there's an opportunity, I think, for farmers to have a regenerative offer across their farm, which I think would bring in more income and be really appealing for consumers here in India.
So you start out focusing on cotton as a crop, but then they expand into the village practices and the practices they use to create other crops which they either can sell or use themselves. Darwin, what sort of farm sizes are we talking about? Give us that context.
So on a very broad scale, if we talk about, there are two quite distinct differences, I would say. One, which is quite typical to the entire Indian subcontinent, and when I say that, I mean India, Pakistan, Bangladesh, where you have typically the small landholder farmers. You're talking on an average of about 1.5 to about 2 acres per farmer, which is entirely different in Turkey. There, small landholder farmers are farmers with about 20 hectares plus. So that's huge as per Indian standard, and they call it small farmers, small landholder farmers. The other part is the mechanized and more advanced form of farming, which is practiced in Turkey, where they use, because of course of the large landholding size, they use more advanced technologies, machineries, equipments, and drones as well. So more advanced technology-based solution is what is already almost inherently incorporated in the farming practices in Turkey. Whereas if you talk about Gujarat or India in general, due to the smaller landholder size and other reasons and factors as well, the farming practices are a lot more traditional. So where you use, you know, manual to other smaller equipments a lot more in our farming.
I'm really fascinated to know how an almost entirely India-based social enterprise dealing with smallholders for a long time can go to Turkey and deal with mechanized larger landholders and get anything done. It sounds incredible. How has that process worked? And what were some of the challenges? And what have been some of your early stage outcomes from what here in Turkey?
So I'd give that credit largely to Alison. It was primarily her vision to expand into different geographies that offer and provide various solution for the entire sector. And of course, since we are in this agriculture-specific sector, so we were looking at various geographies. Turkey definitely is on the world map with regards to amongst the largest supplier, let's say particularly for the cotton. The other reason was the market driven, the demands from customers, because Turkey being very close to the European market, so Turkey by default has that interest from the customer as well. So it was a combination of Alison's vision and the demand from the market that drove us to experiment and reach out to expand to various geographies. So that's how Turkey being one of them.
So that's great to understand why you're there. But now, Alison, I'm sure you talk us through the next bit of how the process is taking place and how you link regenerative work in Gujarat with regenerative work in Turkey when the farms and the process are completely different.
I mean, we're really fortunate. We've got some really talented individuals at Cotton Connect. Now, we have a group of agronomists, and in Pakistan, we have Arif Magdoun, who's a really expert agronomist, and he went to Turkey. And I think at the beginning, they were like, well, what can we learn? And then they began to listen to Arif and learn about his expertise in cotton agronomy. And I think one day he just pulled up the soil and showed them that there was nothing in the soil. There was no life in the soil. There were no worms. There were no insects, because so much pesticide had been applied and it was so compacted.
Just to backtrack a little, how do you find these farms? I mean, you don't just turn up in eastern Turkey and go, anyone know any cotton farmers I can lecture about regen? How do you find them?
So we have a method of working with local partners or with local organisations, and then we go through a criteria of farmer recruitment.
How long did that take to get that group together where you could say, your soil has no life?
it's probably 1 to 2 years to really find the right people and then gain trust, because it's a bit like at home, you know, somebody knocks on your door and says they can help you do something different. I mean, most of us would be like, well, really, can you? And so you have to find somebody who's prepared to test some of the new techniques. And I think at that moment with Arif and the soil, and I think they suddenly went, oh, wow, yeah, there's nothing there. And actually, farmers in Turkey were spraying pesticides, and it's like 6 more times, isn't it, now? They were just putting so much pesticide on. They didn't need to. It needs to be applied properly, so it has to go under the leaf. Mm. But if you do sort of a global spray above the plant, it's just not getting to those sucking pests.
So, Dara, talk us through how you got them towards regen. Because the description I got from you last was effectively making them better farmers. And then we're calling it regen. Is that enough?
Well, I would say at least it's a start. It's definitely not easy venturing into any new geographies due to various reasons. And one of the reasons for Turkey was a very tough and a rigid mindset. Because, of course, they have been practicing the farming through their equipments and technologies and methods for years and generations. Of course, the results were right before their eyes, tried and tested results. So to bring about any improvement in those mindset and the practices, it does take time, a lot of convincing. One needs to have a very good and strong knowledge of what we are talking about and our practices. And B, a lot of it has to be demonstration-based, which is what our standard practices. I'd like to also add our collaborations also, both at domestic or a local level, to the international collaborations with various organizations, bodies, and experts definitely helps add and build to those reasons. It's a time-consuming and gradual process of building this mutual trust where experiments and our practices through the demo blocks shows them the progress vis-a-vis the regular farmers or the control farmers or the other farmers in their traditional methods. These help build, you know, the level of confidence, because then the results are evident and right before their eyes. That's how you gradually build the trust. The local partners also play a very important role, because they are known to the geography, known to the farmers and various other organizations and bodies. They help their participation and engagement. Basically, we leverage. And it helps, you know, take the leap in about, you know, times of building those relations.
So what have you gone to do differently? What are the outcomes and why is it regenerative?
Yeah, so I think it's better agricultural practices, looking at pesticide, fertilizer application. And then also there's quite a lot of technology and new technology. So drone usage is quite popular. But how effective is it and how can we use those new techniques in Turkey to also drive better practices? So as you say, better farming techniques. And then it's looking at biodiversity on the farm and looking at those border crops, looking at the bird life, looking at insect life as well. So things where there is common crossover into an India or Pakistan context.
From what I understand, you've reduced input costs and yield has also improved. Is that right, Dara?
In this case of Turkey? That is correct. While our impact analysis are still going on, but from our preliminary tests and analysis, we have seen improved yield. Not quote the numbers or the figures here, but definitely a decent significant increase in yield with comparison to the control farmers through our practices. And it's just year one itself. It's largely about what not should be practiced. Mm-hmm. You know, and changing that mindset is what the stepping stone is for us. Through certain practices which, to their mind, they might be doing right or good, but eventually in the medium to long run might be damaging for the soil, for the land. So how to reduce those bad practices is what one of our key stresses are, and which has shown some good results in the first year itself.
We must be fair and say this is only the first year. It sounds like some excellent achievement so far. And it's also important to note, of course, that regen as a paradigm to replace sustainable agriculture is pretty young as well. Of course, the term's been around for a long time. And you're already seeing some excellent results here in Gujarat around regen, which I think you're about to publish in your next impact report. Is that right?
Yes, that's correct.
So the big question to finish off is, and so what? Guilty-feeling brands can fund Cotton Connect to help 5% of Gujarati's cotton farmers or 500 Turkish farmers to become better, and we can start to call that regenerative early days. But so what? In terms of a global change perspective, in terms of making a bigger impact, How are we going to leverage the great work that you've done to avoid ConConnect being another one of these slightly bigger pilot programs that's helped 5,000 smallholders?
Well, to start with, over time, we've worked with 770,000 farmers. And then if you look at the farming family, that's impacting the lives of 4 million people.
So that's been more than 5,000.
It is a bit more than 5,000. And then I think in overall, cotton volume really is about 2% of global cotton volumes. There's still more to do, but I feel that in the last 10 years, we've made really significant progress. And I think you're right, we need to scale up. This needs to go to all farmers. We're obviously here in Gujarat, and it's great to see the government of India having farmers as part of their forward policy. We've got the textile ministry has got a big conference coming up in February. This sort of movement within government and within other organisations, I think for us, is really important. If we're going to get that traction and scale. We've got proven techniques. We know it can work. We can trace the cotton. We've met an amazing gin owner today who's really committed to sustainability and ethics in his business. So we've got all the signals for fantastic growth in the future.
I see you've got some ambitious 2030 targets. One of them is, I think, around massively reducing carbon emissions. Is that right?
We've got carbon front and centre of the work we do, and really sitting against climate change, which we see as having an enormous impact in farming communities. So we're looking at a 50% reduction in carbon emissions against a 2017 baseline. So a pretty aggressive goal that we set ourselves. If we don't aim high, I really think we're just not going to move the needle in terms of climate change mitigation that we need to deliver.
If we're really ambitious about the potential for ConConnect, and let's just talk about Gujarat for now, where could you take the organisation by 2030 in terms of a wider impact than the many tens of thousands or hundreds of thousands of cotton farmers that you've already worked with?
I think there's so much to play for here. We've got the Indian government looking at a brand called Kasturi Cotton to really begin to market cotton from India. And I think if that could also have the sustainable cotton as part of it and have regenerative in that, that could be the future. If we're successful, then we don't exist. Maybe that's the goal, that we're so successful that others have taken it forward.
Do you think there's potential for a landscape and jurisdictional approach to bring in other acts? Again, if we just think about Gujarat for now, do you think there's some potential there to work towards?
Yes, absolutely. It's good quality cotton. It's at the heart of manufacturing. We've got the farmers. I tend to find Gujarati farmers, you give a little bit of information and they soar in terms of delivery and impact. So yes, absolutely.
Excellent. Well, thank you both, Dawa and Alison. If you want to know more about what ComConnect is doing, there's plenty on the Innovation Forum website. You might be listening to this on our podcast feed. But keep an eye on our YouTube channel, sign up to our email updates, because we will be putting out what we think will be a very good documentary explaining the story of traceability and regeneration for Gujarat cotton, which will be out in a couple of months' time. In the meantime, Dawa, Alison, thank you for your hospitality, your patience and your generosity here in India. And we'll look forward to continuing to support your important work. Thank you.
Thank you, Toby.